a couple weeks ago, two very prominent Catholic women held forth on the relation between the church and civil society. The first was Kathleen Sebelius, Health and Human Services Secretary, in a speech given to Georgetown. And then the second was Maureen Dowd, the columnist for the New York Times. Now, Dowd's article was a bit of a screed. Sebelius' talk was much more measured. But both gave voice to what I think are two really fundamental misunderstandings that are sadly widespread in society today. Let's start with Dowd's article first. Echoing really an army of commentators from the past 50 years, she exults in James Joyce's characterization of the church, supposedly drawn from the pages of Finnegan's Wake, as "here comes everybody." So the word Catholic, katholos, means according to the whole, it means inclusive, it means universal. So at its best, the church, you know, reaches out, includes all things and all people. How sad, therefore, she said, the church has become, you know, cramped and restricting, whether it's disciplining liberal nuns or it's speaking out against pro-choice commencement speakers. The church seems to have abandoned the better angels of its nature and turned into a very cramped and defensive, you know, society. Here's a quote now from her article. It's in her typically over-the-top style. She says, "Absolute intolerance is always a sign of uncertainty and panic. Why do you have to hunt down everyone unless you're weak? But what is the quality of a belief that exists simply if it's enforced? Not only is this narrow-minded aggression un-Catholic, it's downright unpatriotic. This is America. We don't hunt heresies here. We welcome them." Okay, what's the misunderstanding? It's this fundamental one between inclusivity in regard to people and inclusivity in regard to ideas. Is the church universally inclusive? In principle, yes, I would say, because the church wants to draw everyone into the life of Christ. Think of the great image of the Bernini colonnade. If you look at St. Peter's from above, you see the arms reaching out. And people indeed do flood into that square from all over the world. And the idea is that Mother Church gathering in everyone. In principle, the church is radically inclusive that way. But ideas are something different. From the beginning, the church has held off, sometimes very aggressively, certain ideas which are repugnant to its essential nature. The church is not a Voltairean debating society, by which I mean just a group that comes together and let's just debate and see where the argument leads us. And we're not that. We're a religion based upon revelation, grounded in certain truths that define our very nature, which is why from the earliest centuries, you've got great theologians and great defenders of the faith who very aggressively excluded certain ideas from the Catholic community. It's a way of maintaining the integrity of a faith based upon a certain definite revelation. And now I want to broaden that a little bit to show how absolutely taken for granted this is in other areas of life. Suppose you're a member of the Abraham Lincoln Society. You're a proud member of that society. And someone proposed, you know what, I think we should abandon Lincoln. We should study Winston Churchill. Well, I mean, they love Winston Churchill, but no, we're the Lincoln Society. We're defined by our preoccupation with Lincoln. Suppose you're a member of the USGA, United States Golf Association, and someone says, you know, Pebble Beach, the greatest golf course in the world, let's turn that into a whole series of baseball diamonds. Well, if you're the least bit passionate about the USGA, you'd say, well, absolutely not. This is undermining the whole purpose of our society. So a church that simply welcomed any idea would cease to be itself in very short order. Now, here's the second misunderstanding, and it's on clearer display in the Sebelius speech. She rather deftly sidestepped the HHS controversy, you know, which has been very much in the news, and she talked more generically about church-state and drew our attention to John F. Kennedy's famous October 1960 speech to a group of Protestant ministers in Houston. Famous speech because JFK lays out this very sharp delineation between church and state. And I'm going to just quote the line that Sebelius cited very positively. JFK dreamed of an America, quote, in which no religious body seeks to impose its will, either directly or indirectly, on the general populace. Now, as I say, you can hear that call echoed over and over again the last 50 years. Anyone that's interested in, you know, the church-state separation will cite that very strong statement of JFK. See, but here's the problem. The problem is that this vision, if we really follow it, would exclude some of the great figures and great moments in our political and moral history. See, any public speech, any law, any policy move is an attempt to impose your will, directly or indirectly. If I have a law saying you only drive 55, that was an attempt by the state to impose its will on people. Now go back over our history. Go back to the 19th century, and you've got William Lloyd Garrison, and you've got John Brown, Lincoln himself, all of whom were opposed to slavery and using different strategies, but were all trying to impose their will on a more or less recalcitrant country. Think of Abraham Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation. It was by no means, universally accepted. What was Lincoln trying to do? He was trying to impose his will. Look at Martin Luther King in the 20th century. Here's someone coming clearly out of the religious tradition, very much formed by the biblical vision. And through his marches and through his demonstrations and through his great public orations, was very much trying to impose his will on a still largely recalcitrant, reluctant country. Think, for example, not long after the I Have a Dream speech, you have King with LBJ exulting in the passage of civil rights legislation. Well, what's that but an attempt to impose one's will in regard to this vexing question? My point is, it's just a false dichotomy. All the people I mentioned there were motivated by religion. If you doubt me on Lincoln, look at the Second Inaugural, where he puts the Civil War very much in a religious framework. And all of them, getting involved in the lively public conversation, were indeed trying, directly or indirectly, to impose their will on the rest of the country. My point is, in the America envisioned by John F. Kennedy, none of that would be allowed. That's why, it's a red herring. Religious people oughtn't to be imposing their will. Look, in the lively public conversation, which is America, everyone is trying to do that. Whether you're on a TV talk show, whether you're in the halls of Congress, whether you're in a state legislature, whether you're giving a persuasive public speech, you're trying to impose your will. Everybody is. Fine, that's the way the system works. What I resent, though, is the implication that religious people, qua religious, simply aren't allowed in that conversation. Their point of view has to become something like a hobby. That's to say, a privatized opinion. I would never endeavor to say, to the whole country, you have to become a devotee of bridge. Let's say you're a devotee of bridge. Good. You and your friends get together and play bridge. You never try to impose that, because it's a private hobby. Well, what's happened, in the kind of Sibelius JFK vision, is religion has been reduced to the level of a hobby. Well, tell that to William Lloyd Garrison, John Brown, Abraham Lincoln, or Martin Luther King. See, I want their tribe to increase. I want religion to have that same range and persuasive power in the public square.